Well, good morning, and thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be with you. You've made me feel so welcome. I've prayed with Diana this morning. Thank you, Peter, for your welcome. I'm really pleased to be here to spend some time considering this topic of love in the time of climate change. It's an important topic. It's a big topic. But in my conversations with Peter leading up to today, he has told me that you are a church that is not afraid of tackling the big topics, the big questions, and I'm really encouraged by that. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of it. No doubt, it's a topic that there are many perspectives and thoughts and feelings about in this room. So I just wanted to start, I thought it might be helpful, with a bit of context as to how Christians in Australia generally are thinking about it. According to the National Church Life Survey, the majority of church attenders in Australia agree climate change is happening. Not all of us are convinced about the role that humans play, but more than half agree humans are largely causing it. Now, in the research that Tearfund published earlier this year, we saw that Christians aged 40 years and younger are highly engaged with this issue. More than 3 in 5 Christians between the ages of 18 and 40 say they're either very or extremely concerned about climate change, and 2/3 of them want to see local churches taking responsibility for action. Tearfund's research also showed that there are a range of views about how the issue intersects with our Christian faith and what we understand to be the mission of the church. Some people express concerns for the potential for this issue to distract us from our core purpose or to divide us. I want to acknowledge all those different points of view and thank you for being willing to lean in with me, even if it is a bit uncomfortable. There is the space and the grace to hold our differences here. What I don't want to do today is spend time defending the science of climate change or the merits of particular energy policies, but what I do want to do is speak a bit about my own journey of faith, my work in relation to climate change, and how I think we can understand this in the context of God's good news for the world, and how in light of that we might respond as an expression of our love for God and love for our neighbour. So, by way of introduction, this is me and my family, my husband James and my 2 children, Harriet and George, just out of picture. And the reason why we're laughing is our 14-year-old Labradoodle, Gilbert, who is also a treasured member of our family despite his non-compliance with family photos. We live in Melbourne's inner north. We're part of Merry Creek Anglican Church. We've actually just planted a second congregation in Fairfield that my family and I are a part of. So that's a really exciting time for us as part of that church. Before I moved to Melbourne in the late 2000s, I'm originally from Sydney, I was part of a church in an inner city suburb with a long history of ministry and mission amongst people experiencing poverty and marginalisation. I'd grown up in a very different part of Sydney, one that was affluent and comfortable, but here I was confronted with the realities of addiction, homelessness, mental illness, racism, and generational trauma. And I was asking the question, well, what is God's good news in the context of such broken lives? It was an incredibly formative time in my faith, one that was both deeply enriching and deeply challenging. On more than one occasion, our offering plates were stolen, and to this day when I get up to take communion, I think twice about leaving my handbag at my seat. That's actually why Matthew's sitting right behind me there today. But within that community, the words of the Old Testament law and prophets, the many words of Jesus concerning the poor, the time he spent seeking out the people who were marginalised and rejected by society, all of this took on a meaning that I hadn't to that point understood. And I came to see the centrality of God's love and justice for the poor to the Christian gospel, and consequently to the life of Christian discipleship. Those experiences had a profound influence on my life and on my vocational path, and that has led, as Peter mentioned, to my work now with Tear Fund, which I think many of you will already know is a Christian development and relief organisation working with local Christian partners around the world, helping communities to overcome poverty in some of the most challenging and complex environments. And while in recent years the conversation in Australia about climate change has framed it as a divisive political issue, a social and a class issue, my work with Tear Fund has brought me much closer to understanding climate change as an issue that goes to the heart of our Christian faith and to God's love and justice for the poor. Which leads me to another introduction. This is a man named Dooley Megwal. Dooley lives in a rural village in northwest India, and like many families in that area, he relies on rain-fed agriculture for their livelihood. But over the past 20 years, the rainfall has become increasingly sporadic. Land that used to produce enough to feed them for a year now only produces enough for 6 months. And this doesn't just make putting food on the table more difficult, it disrupts the whole family system. People who are able to work often have to migrate for months at a time. The very old and the very young are left behind with not people to take care of them properly. Sometimes they don't even know if those who've gone are alive or dead. Now, I don't know Dooley personally. He is known to Tear Fund through the work of our partner, Efficor. But what Dooley is experiencing is just some of the impacts of climate change. And it's people like Dooley that are the reason why Tear Fund has been speaking about this issue for many years. The extreme weather, drought, famine and disease associated with climate change make it one of the biggest threats to the global effort to end poverty that we currently face. Dooley's story is not an isolated one. Current estimates are that by 2030, an additional 132 million people could be pushed into poverty. After decades of progress towards ending hunger, severe food insecurity is on the rise. Right now, around 50 million people are on the brink of famine, and climate change is one of the reasons why. And so we ask the question, what is God's good news in the context of this brokenness? Well, the good news begins in a garden. The story of creation that we read in the opening passages of Genesis, God speaking creation into existence and declaring it to be good. He creates Adam and Eve in his own image and places them in the garden with the instruction to steward and care for it. And the psalmists knew this. Psalm 24 begins with a direct declaration of the greatness of God, recognising God's ultimate ownership of the whole earth in all its fullness. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. The reason being, God is creator, for he founded it on the seas and established it on the waters. This psalm is about God's presence, coming to dwell with humanity as he did in the garden. Lift up your heads, you gates. Lift them up, you ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is he, this King of glory? Well, he is the one to whom the whole earth belongs. This is not our earth, but God's, a precious gift entrusted to us and the brothers and sisters with whom we share it, even the very least, are the precious possession of God. Living as you and I do in the most livable city in one of the world's wealthiest countries, it can be easy to take this gift for granted, and yet we are dependent on it, aren't we? Not only for our quality of life, but for life itself. Tim Healy is a lecturer in theology and ministry at Alpha Crucis College and has a master's degree in theology with a research focus on Christian environmental ethics. And he describes it like this: all known life in the universe exists in a tiny sliver of habitable space called the biosphere. Relatively speaking, it's about as thick as a layer of varnish on a cricket ball. And yet all living things depend on it to survive, including us. We need fresh water, we need clean air, we need plants and soil and minerals and shelter. We need the earth. Now, the not so good news. We know what happened in the garden. Snake, apple, some bad choices. And the relationships between God and humanity, amongst humanity and humanity with creation were broken. And as a result, among other things, we haven't been great gardeners of the earth. Climate change is the phrase we use to describe the changes, long-term trends we've seen in recent decades of the earth's average temperatures and shifts in weather patterns associated with those changes. Changes that have been driven by greenhouse gas emissions that are the result of human activity. Now, there's a lot of good that's come from the development of the past 50-100 years, but we now understand it has come at a cost. The natural limits of God's earth have been broken. There isn't a region in the world that isn't already experiencing some of these impacts, but it is the poorest who are being hit most severely. They are also the least resourced to adapt. The world's poorest 3.5 billion people are responsible for just 10% of carbon emissions. Australians, on the other hand, are some of the highest per capita greenhouse gas emitters in the world. It is a grave injustice that those who have contributed least to the problem of climate change suffer its most dire consequences. What is good news in the context of this brokenness? Well, the good news is that God is at work restoring what is broken through Jesus, who had his own wrestle in a garden before making the way for the reconciling of God with humanity, humanity with each other and with creation in Christ, in whom, for whom and through whom all things were made, all things are being reconciled to God. This is good news. Love in the time of climate change begins with God's love for his earth and all who live in it. But love doesn't end there, because God invites us to be part of his great work of restoration by responding to Jesus' call to follow him, to obey his commands, to love God and love our neighbour. Part of loving God means working with him to care for his creation, not working against his plan to restore it. Part of loving people means caring deeply about the environment on which they, like us, depend for their very existence. Part of loving God and loving people means caring about the injustice of climate change, the downstream consequences of our choices and behaviours on people living in our world's poorest communities and the generations who will live on this earth after we're gone. So how do we put love like this into practice? What can we actually do in response to a problem that is so vast, so complex? I have three ideas. The first is we need to talk about climate change in light of the gospel hope that we share. And there's two reasons for this. Firstly, because climate change is not just a political issue to which we merely bring a Christian perspective. It's an issue that is deeply connected with the work that God is doing in our world and our part in that. It just so happens that the world is talking about it too. The majority of the Australian community, especially its younger members, are concerned about climate change and want to see Australia playing its part to address the problem. In Tear Fund's research, we asked younger Christians what they wanted to see the church doing in response to climate change. And one of the strongest themes to come through was talk about it. They wanted to hear more teaching about climate change and creation care. They wanted the space for conversation. They wanted to hear the church take a clear stance on the issue and be speaking up in the broader public sphere. As we integrate this more fully into our own discipleship, there's a missional opportunity, a chance to connect with our communities and those younger Christians who are wondering about what the church has to say. And there's something only we can bring. That's the hope that we have in God's vision of a flourishing creation that encompasses the whole earth and all who live in it. The second reason we need to talk about climate change is because talking is a critical step towards taking action. Dr. Catherine Hayhoe is an atmospheric scientist, a climate change expert. She's also an evangelical Christian and a pastor's wife. And she says the most important thing we can do about climate change is talk about it in ways that connect with what we value. While staying silent can add to our anxiety and our inaction, talking about it helps us to confront the fears that we have, helps us feel less alone in our concerns and questions, helps us to move beyond feeling stuck and helpless, and motivates us to act. Now, the very fact that I am here speaking today on this topic shows that you are already taking positive steps in this direction. And so let me encourage you to keep doing it. It's something that at this point rarely happens in most evangelical churches. The second idea is to live as faithful stewards of the creation God has entrusted to us. In Leviticus 25, we read God's very specific laws and instructions for how his people, the Israelites, were to practice the Sabbath. The Sabbath was not only for the people, but for the whole creation. I'll read a bit. For 6 years, sow your fields, and for 6 years, prune your vineyards and gather their crops. But in the seventh year, the land is to have a year of Sabbath rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. Do not sow your fields or prune your vineyards. Do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the grapes of your untended vines. The land is to have a year of rest. How are we allowing the earth to rest? It was in 2015 that 195 countries came together to discuss how to address climate change. This resulted in the Paris Agreement, which was a groundbreaking commitment to stop global average temperatures from increasing by more than 2 degrees, to try and limit them to 1.5. Now, to do this, we need to reduce all of our carbon emissions to net zero as fast as possible, and the action we take over the next 8 to 10 years will be critical. Now, we're talking about transformation at scale, beyond what any one of us individually could affect. But it doesn't mean that individually we can't play a part. As households, families, as church communities, in the context of our workplaces, our schools and our community organisations, we need to look at the source and the quantity of energy we're consuming. We need to look at the waste we produce. We need to look at where our money is invested, what industries we're supporting. In each of these spheres of our lives and with the influence that we have, we need to pay attention to how we are caring for God's earth and where we can do better. Wealthy people have a greater responsibility to live as faithful stewards because we have more capacity, more finances, more resources. Luke 12, from everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded, and the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. As we are in this livable city, in this wealthy nation, we need to own our responsibility for stepping up to play our part. As I have sought to live more faithfully in my role as steward, this has in many ways brought me more joy and wonder in my faith. paying attention to this extraordinary creation, understanding it as revelation of God's wisdom and glory, as the Bible describes, has led me to an even deeper worship of who God is. But it has also at times been uncomfortable, inconvenient. It slowed me down when I haven't wanted to slow down, and I've gone without at times when it would have been nice to indulge. It has involved some sacrifice. But if there's one thing that as Christians we should be willing to embrace, it's the idea, isn't it, that love can involve sacrifice. Jesus demonstrated the ultimate act of love, laying down his life for our sake. He did for us what we could not do for ourselves. And this is Jesus who says, "Come follow me, live as I have shown you, love one another as I have loved you." And so this leads me to idea number three, to be compassionate and generous neighbours as we consider and respond to climate change. Our stewardship is not only a way of honouring God, it's an act of love for those who live now and those who will live in the generations to come. Understanding the injustice of climate change on our most vulnerable neighbours, we can live simply and give generously to those who are already facing some of its worst impacts. And as we talk about it, as we participate, as we bring our salt to the broader conversation, we can be compassionate and generous in how we approach that task. But we can also think bigger about the influence that we can have playing our part in advocating for systemic change, for the role that Australia plays in being a good neighbour in our region and in our world. We can do this as we engage in the bigger public conversation. We can engage with our MPs. Right now, Tearfund is encouraging people to write to their MPs responding to the current hunger crisis, to advocate not only for immediate humanitarian assistance, but also for that longer-term strategic work of making our food systems more just and more sustainable, and for investing in the climate resilience of our region. You can play a part in this by adding your voice. And if you have a computer or a smartphone, you can do that in less than 10 minutes. Talking about climate change, living as faithful stewards, and at all times being compassionate and generous neighbours, these are ways that we can join in God's restorative work and be the hands and feet of God's love in a time of climate change. Now, I mentioned that this is a topic Tearfund's been learning and sharing about for many years, and we have a whole range of resources available for you if you'd like to look into it further. The research that I quoted from, and there's much more to that, has been published in a report entitled They Shall Inherit the Earth. It presents all of the findings into the attitudes of Christians towards climate change, with a particular focus on those between the ages of 18 to 40 years. You can download this from our website along with a number of other resources. We have Bible studies, ways that you can pray, fact sheets. There's a great video series by Catherine Hayhoe, the scientist I mentioned earlier. This is wonderful for small group resources, small group studies and discussions. So please do take a look. There's a link there if you want to make a note of it. Just to finish, there was an album of music produced recently called Climate Vigil, and it was released by a group called The Porter's Gate. And I thought I would finish with some of the lyrics from one of the songs on that album, and I wondered if you would join me in it's kind of like a prayer, so maybe we could pray this. God, creating all we see, all that lives beyond our gaze, fill the earth with breath and praise, call us into harmony, teach us how to join with you, ever making all things new.